Good evening, everyone. It's October 15th, 2018. This is the hopefully the last meeting this year of our expanded budget committee. We have a number of over-target requests to take a look at, but we have offered to give some time to the president of our Chamber of Commerce, Jennifer Tavares, who is here, to show us something about an over-target that came in late under the sponsorship of Martha Robertson. And why don't we go ahead, Jennifer, when you're ready.
Thanks, Mike. And certainly I'm grateful that you were able to find a few minutes tonight versus at the last meeting when I was otherwise occupied and unable to attend. I apologize also that I didn't know that this would spark so much discussion at the last meeting when it was initially looked at. Obviously, we would have been here, had someone here to talk and be on hand to answer your questions more directly if we had maybe, at any rate. I don't even know if I was in town, but I apologize that we missed that that meeting. So I'm just going to do a very condensed overview of this because, frankly, we could probably talk for an hour and a half just about this project, and I know you don't have that much time. I'm going to try to just really briefly explain what we're trying to accomplish, why we're trying to accomplish it, and why I feel or we feel that it supports the county's goals, it supports our community's goals for economic and workforce development. So very briefly, the Live in Ithaca project is something that the Chamber has been working on with several other partners for well over 3 years to try to do a much better job explaining what our community is, helping people understand what it's like to live here, and giving people really good reasons to live here in support of our workforce development, recruitment, and retention efforts. I want to say I know you all are aware that this is an extremely transient community, that we have a lot of people coming in every day, every week, every year, new to the community, and we have a lot of people leaving. And so we need to do a much better job, if we can, of orienting those people to everything about this community. And by community, I mean countywide, not just Ithaca. I realize that this is called Live in Ithaca. Similarly to Visit Ithaca, which you all know is our very recognizable tourism brand, this is sort of initially based off of that brand name. So after a couple years of meeting with partners about their specific challenges with recruiting and also retaining their workforce here, we had proposed a solution that would be a really comprehensive career search community guide website. The search function, I just want to caution, is not like in place of Indeed or in place of what the Department of Labor is doing. It's intended to tell much better and deeper stories about our absolutely wonderful and diverse employer base here, the type of jobs and opportunities they have available, and the kind of people that work at those many employers in our community. An integrated marketing campaign and an outward-facing recruitment effort to help people better understand our opportunities here, but again, from that quality of life, that storytelling position, not so much just here's another job that you're going to see when you're searching the internet. And then a print relocation and community guide that's more of a magazine style that's published twice per year that helps people understand really what this community is about. That's a nice piece that they can pick up after they've come here, after they've already moved here, walking around town, that our HR professionals, recruiters, small businesses, anyone who's talking to anyone about this community and everything that we have to offer here might be able to hand them to help them better understand the community. So it is important to note that, you know, one additional goal of this is to support local residents in their search for information about community amenities, housing, schools, information about local employment opportunities. Again, I hear all the time, as I know many of you do, that there aren't jobs here, and that's absolutely not true. So this is one way, in addition to all of the other ways, that we are trying to help people understand all of their opportunities in this community. Again, addressing the needs of our transient population. In the long-term goal, I know that it's a goal of the legislature as well as many other of our communities to reduce our in-commuting. So knowing that we have 15,000 people a day commuting into Tompkins County and we don't want to exacerbate that problem, we want to do everything we can to invite people to live in Tompkins County versus the counties outside when they're making that choice. And we want to make that choice easier for them on the front end versus after they've already taken a job here and they're still commuting to Cortland or to Elmira or to Vestal or some other community outside. One of the biggest issues that a lot of the employers shared with us is that while some of them are having success in recruiting a more diverse workforce and a more diverse candidate pool, they are struggling to get commitments from some of those people to come and work here, and they're also struggling to retain that workforce in Tompkins County. We don't want to oversell what this community has to offer, but one thing that we've been very aware of as this project has developed is to, as accurately and fairly as we can, represent what we have to offer as a community. The various resources and organizations and schools and churches that will be available to people if they do choose to come here so that they know what they're getting before they make that choice, and hopefully then they will be more inclined to stay here and grow here and thrive here with us. And I know that we all have a shared vision of a more inclusive and thriving local economy, and that, you know, we believe the more we can support our employers, whether they're small businesses, whether they're entrepreneurial startups, whether they're existing larger employers in this community, in meeting their workforce recruitment and retention goals, the more broadly the entire community is going to succeed in the long run. What we don't want is a growing company that's doubling in size in the next 2 years to not ever be able to find the workforce that they need here and to have to make the choice that they're going to go grow somewhere else, right? So we're trying to strategically support those efforts with this project. Some specific challenges and opportunities that this presents is that right on day one, there will be over 200 employers represented on the sites with direct links to information about those workplaces and their job openings that they have. As I'm sure you all know, we have strong year-over-year job growth in Tompkins County. The year-over-year numbers were 2,600 new jobs. And meanwhile, our unemployment rate continues to decline and our available workforce to take those jobs continues to decline. On any given day, this is an example of the employment openings at some of our key employers, which are pretty substantial numbers. Once you aggregate all of the numbers, there's easily over 2,000 jobs available at any given time. And one of the things that I think is really important to note is what we are looking at for demographics. The last 25 years, our retirement age population has grown by 17,000, but the entire county population and other age categories has not kept up with that pace. The projections for the next 20-year period of time, 15 to 20-year period of time, show that we are going to continue to have more workforce at retirement age, but unless we can find a way to attract more younger professionals and younger families to Tompkins County or back to Tompkins County, ideally, that's one of the major goals of this project, we're going to struggle to retain all of those jobs and all those employers, and it will have ripple effects elsewhere in the economy. So that is one of the biggest opportunity areas for us. We also have a much higher than normal number of retirees who want to stay here, as I'm sure you all know, based on the housing needs assessment and other data that you see regularly. Additionally, we have a lot of graduates, as you all know, annually from our local higher ed institutions, so we might have an opportunity to better capture and retain some of those folks to the community or to get them back sooner than we might otherwise. And again, that perception that there's no jobs here, it's, you know, we need to do everything we can to help folks find opportunities that are available. I know there was a question about who else had, you know, invested in the project. Right now, it is all privately funded. There's a nonprofit foundation, I would say Tompkins County Development Corp, and a couple other nonprofit organizations, certainly, who recognize the challenges that they have with workforce recruitment and also, you know, just want to be able to utilize these resources as a gateway to the community and also to their employment opportunities. That just so to be clear, the goal there was a first-year goal. Once the initial project is built, the ongoing expenses for continued marketing campaign efforts, et cetera, are expected to be lower. But obviously, we will want to continue seeing project funding from some of those sources to make sure that we can continue doing this work. So I think it was back in the spring, the first time I talked to Jason and Martha both about, hoping that the county, both as an employer, as a key employer in the community, which has its own workforce recruitment and retention needs, and also as our leading municipality would be interested in participating in the project. We would love to see some public investment. Again, to date, there has not been any. Workforce recruitment and retention efforts of the county specifically, as well as supporting you and your goals to onboard new hires. And then again, I just think that there's a lot of shared goals here that we can all agree as a community to support our growth opportunities and also long-term economic sustainability that we do need to be paying attention to, ensuring that we have the workforce that we need for all of our area employers. So we've been in, just to give you an idea of where the project is at, it's probably a couple of months from initial launch. We've been in a pretty significant content build phase. This resource is a lot more than careers and job postings and featured employers. Every community in the county will be featured. Every school district in the county will be featured. It's not just Live in Ithaca. There will also be a lot about, Groton and Trumansburg and Dryden and all of our smaller communities where people can also choose to live, can also choose to go to school. A lot of our community organizations are going to be featured. Everything from transportation options to healthcare options to volunteer opportunities. And again, religious organizations, churches. How will people know that they're going to find the community that they need if they do choose to come here? And even again, with that transient population that comes in every single year, we can much more strategically connect people to the opportunities and to the community that they're looking for after they've already made the choice to come to Ithaca and Tompkins County. I can give people a really quick example of how the site is feeling. We do have a beta. It's almost no one has seen it, so it's pretty exciting at this point. I just want to make sure you understand it's an example of what a couple of the sections are feeling like right now. So this, for example, is the transportation section. What we're trying to do with is have high-level imagery. This will be mobile-friendly. It will be fully accessible. So regardless of whether someone has a reader that they need to use or what device they're using, they will be able to access the information on the site. Talks about various transportation options within the community, highlighting things like bike share, our public transportation, how to get in and out of the airport, of course, regional New York City travel, Bike Walk Tompkins, Ithaca Car Share, how to access transportation. Believe it or not, I'm sure many of you know that a lot of people move into town, and students and otherwise, and need to figure out how to buy their car once they get here. This gives you an example of a map feature that will be available throughout the site on many of the pages. So right now this is featuring transportation. But one thing that's really difficult if you are trying to learn this community is understanding the difference between all of these municipal boundaries and all of those school district boundaries and what on the earth is Northeast and Bell Sherman. And so we're going to try to have maps that will really clearly indicate for people, if I choose to go live in Freeville, what does that mean for me? What's my commute to Cornell going to look like? How am I going to get there? All those kinds of things. But again, having all these resources in one place is something that hopefully will also benefit people who already live here. I apologize for my scrolling. At the bottom, people will be able to sign up for a newsletter so that we can stay in touch with them if they want to hear more about job opportunities. Maybe they're alumni from one of the colleges and they're thinking about coming back someday, but they're not sure if they're ready yet, but they do want to stay in touch with us. We have that capability, and that'll be one component of the marketing program. They can request one of the relocation and community guides right through the site. And this is just an example of what a featured employer site page might look like. So there's going to be 12 separate business categories here. Municipal and government will be one of them. Software, hardware and manufacturing technologies, hospitality and retail, healthcare, finance, insurance, and legal, as you see here. Big level feature for some of our key employers. This example is Tompkins Financial. And then people will be able to scroll down and look at other key employers that we have in those categories throughout the community. So again, here, any municipalities or school districts that have employment opportunities will be featured. And really, with well over 200 just to start, there's going to be a lot of ways to connect people to and help them explore all the good things that we have to offer here. And I have certainly more to answer questions with, but I don't want to take too much of your time, and I want to make sure that if people have specific questions, we get a chance to answer them.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Absolutely.
Shauna Black.
Can you tell us what the actual, is the actual website going to be live-in-?
No.
Okay.
No, it's actually liveinithaca.org.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
This is just the beta website location.
Anna, then Henry.
About the all the different businesses and the transportation systems, are you going to have links to, for example, in the transportation, you'll just have links to the TCAT site. You'll talk about it, describe it, and have links to it
mm-hmm.
for the churches and the synagogues and the, you know, you'll have yep. links to their sites. So it's kind of, in some ways, a directory with a lot of information in the front end all pulled together. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. And here's another example of how that might break down in a given section. So this is a dining and eating local section. We want people to understand the sort of cornucopia of food opportunities available to them, both dining and for purchase if they want to get local food, if they want to support the farmers market. So obviously we all know that's one of our biggest assets as a community. So we scroll down through some feature information, and then they'll be able to actually click and expand if there's a category. Imagine these are higher level categories versus just about the farmers market. But once that expands, this is actually going to be able to click specifically to those different transportation options. If this was the TCAT posting, for example, it would talk about TCAT, bring you right to their website. In some of the categories, another example, actually, I'll show you just really briefly, which I think you'll be interested in.
And while you show us that, just quick
yep.
follow-up. Are you going to have an option on this to have people give, users give feedback on, like, ratings of, you know, whatever, reviews or something? Social media component-ish to it.
No. No. And actually, I mean, there's some places where that has come up as we've talked to people over the last couple of years. And one example was school districts. We want to give a really fair, equal presentation to every school district and county. We want to share all of their information. We're not looking to link to specific rating systems, for example. People can Google those things elsewhere. We want to show them our wonderful imagery and tell the stories of why each of those districts is unique and what they have to offer to students and the quality of life that they have to offer in those different areas in the county. Yep.
Henry.
What do employers tell you about the reasons why they have a challenge hiring people and getting people to retain?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Certainly, in this community, we have, compared to elsewhere in upstate New York, we have a little bit higher than, you know, some of our neighbors as far as housing price goes. One aspect I didn't actually really touch on was that this site will make an effort to help people better understand all of their housing options in the community. So whether they're looking for apartments to rent, whether they're looking for houses to purchase, certainly we could just link to the realtors and say, go call them. But that's not really the plan here. There's a plethora of options in the community, and we can really direct them to all the different resources that are available to help them figure out the housing piece here and what that looks like. A lot of them are typical things that you're going to hear elsewhere, but I think one of the biggest challenges is how tight our labor force is here and how tight the job market is here. We have a very small number of total unemployed individuals and a very high number of jobs available for those individuals at any given time. And they're not all going to be perfect matches for every job posting that we have available. It's just something where, you know, it's almost, I don't want to boil it down to a supply and demand issue, but it's similar to that, right? If we don't have, adequate supply of workforce to match the job openings that we have at any given time and enough qualified and interested candidates for those specific positions, it's very difficult. We have, for Racker Center to very regularly all the time have 100 jobs available no matter what day of the week or month or year you ask, that's a challenge, right? That's a challenge and impediment to them providing the services that they need to provide in this community. If we can't broaden the entire base, if we can't do a better job of helping dual partner households who we know are already here by the hundreds or thousands, find good opportunities and find match opportunities for them, we can't really maximize either their opportunities for income or our opportunities for supporting our employer base and growing as a community.
We're up on 20 minutes now we've spent on this. Let's go to Amanda and Martha.
Thanks for coming in, Jennifer, and for the presentation. I just have one question. Is if a business wanted to be on this page, how would they, do they, can anybody be on it? Do they have to pay to be on it? How do they get on it?
So what we've done on the initial end, so first of all, the employers that are going to be featured in the career section are initially going to be chamber members, any member who has job sites, right? It's not every single member. We're not pulling the whole member directory over, but those that actually have job postings and a clear path to job sites, they will automatically be featured. We do want to also link to other job listing opportunities here. Like, we can easily pre-cook a drive to Indeed, to the Department of Labor site, to any place else people might be looking for other type of job postings. That being said, there are going to be a mixture of different types of businesses and organizations featured throughout the website because it needs to include, you know, everything that there is about the community to offer. And anyone who's not a member of the chamber but interested in participating will have a way to participate by paying basically what's a small advertising fee to be included in the website. So we had to provide a pathway for people one way or another, and I think we've come up with a solution to do that.
Yep. Ann?
I was just going to ask if for the businesses that are on here, will there be something, some designation that you could consider adding if you're not already, like that they provide a living wage or they're minority-owned, LGBTQ-owned, or something like that?
So we probably won't do that here. That's something we've been talking about doing. Certainly in the Relocate or Expand Your Business section, which, by the way, will help people comprehensively identify all the different resources in the community to support their new business startup or expanding or relocating a business here if they want to. So it'll take them to TCAD or Alternatives or Rev or all those other resources. Probably not the best place to be putting little rating systems or notes in, because we do want to make sure that it feels consistent across the site, that everyone's getting sort of equal treatment. We do want to highlight minority women businesses in that section and resources for people who want to grow minority women-owned businesses here, so that is something that will be there. We've been talking about that a little bit on the chamber side, where, again, we have a much more comprehensive business directory, whether we want to find, you know, better ways to identify. Here's a minority women-owned business. Here is someone who I know the URO folks are talking about, businesses that have done Ban the Box and or have tried to find more ways to incorporate formerly incarcerated people into their workforce. And, you know, so there's some discussion in some of those other areas about how to make note of those specific, to give people sort of an extra little symbol next to their business listing.
Thank you.
And Martha, then Mike Sigler, and then I'd like to get it on the table for a vote.
Could you go back to the, like, the beginning where you had the headings on the left and then, yeah, okay. Maybe it's under community. Do you have anything about child care?
We will. There will be. This, again, this is beta testing, so there's only a couple of example sections in each of these. So, again, it's going to be very comprehensive. There will be access to child care and school districts and, again, religious organizations, arts and culture, events, nightlife, that's here. Yes.
Okay.
It will be in there.
And, that might discourage people from coming if you have the truth about that. But, no, I don't. That's a bad joke.
Well, we hope if we make all of the available resources much more plainly available to them, they won't struggle so much to identify their child care opportunities.
Absolutely. So, I don't have to raise my hand again. I would move this as an amendment to the budget.
Well, we're going to take Mike first, and I'll come back to you, Mark.
Okay.
Mike Sigler.
Thanks.
Is that okay?
Good, yep.
All right. Then we'll take, you'll take Martha's motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Deborah Dawson. Discussion on the over target, which is new, and it is to contribute funds to the Tompkins County Chamber's Live in Ithaca. I'm getting that mixed up. Project aimed at area workforce. It's $10,000 one time. It's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Martha.
I would just underscore one piece of information that Jennifer talked about, which was the aging of the population. Martha Armstrong came to PDEC last year, I think it was, and gave a demographic overview, and it was crazy scary. You know, within 10 years, people like me, we're beginning out to pasture, and lots of us. And, you know, it's real. And y'all, the rest of y'all are going to be, you know, I don't know, trying to do everything. So
I know she was hesitant to specifically talk about those numbers. I looked at that chart today. The projected job growth at the current rates was 10,000 jobs. The projected workforce population growth in the 18 to 64 category was stagnant by 2030.
Anyone else?
We won't be able to. Well, but, yeah, we need more people. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm going to vote against this, and it's a protest vote. I don't expect it to lose, but I feel very strongly that the name of the site is inappropriate. And I'm sorry, but everyone doesn't connect all of Tompkins County to Ithaca. And I think it ought to be thought about more strongly than just to say it's Ithaca means the same to everybody. It doesn't. So that's why I won't vote for it. Anyone else? Go ahead, Henry.
Do you know, do you have a sense of how many people are going to be able to visit the site? Have you done any surveys, anything else?
That's a little bit hard to guesstimate. What we've done was we looked at what our typical traffic is based on the site that we manage on the Chamber site and also the Visit Ithaca site, and it's a little hard to project because you could be talking about 40,000, 50,000 unique views. You could be talking about 700,000. Really, part of this and how effective it is going to be depending on how all of the different employers and community members utilize this, how much they're hashtagging it and referencing the stories and social media profiles and things along those lines. So it's a little hard to guesstimate what the traffic's going to be on the front end.
Anne?
I think most people are probably familiar with Taganic Falls or Taganic Park in Trumansburg. It's not in Trumansburg. It's in the town of Ulysses. So I'm perfectly okay with this focusing on Ithaca.
The mailing address is probably Trumansburg. Okay, we're ready to vote on this. All those in favor of the over-target amendment, please raise your hand. Any opposed? We have 1, 2, 3, 4 opposed. That passes. Thank you, Jennifer, for your presentation.
Thank you for your time, everyone.
Thank you for adding it to the agenda tonight.
The next item is a postponed one from previously as well, and this is brought by Henry Granison and Dan Klein. It's new. It's money to the Human Services Coalition.
Yeah, I'll be pulling that.
You're pulling that?
Yeah.
Dan, is that satisfactory with you as well?
Yeah.
All right. That's withdrawn. That was number 13. Number 24 is, this is to the Cornell Cooperative Extension. It is Amanda Champion, over target of $30,000, which is a multi-year, three-year, one-time funding for operations for effectiveness manager position, $30,000 in 2019 and 2020. $15,000 in 2021. Amanda, you want to move that?
Sure, I move that.
Is there a second? Anna? Discussion on this over target. 3 year, one time. $10,000. I'm sorry, $30,000.
Do you want me to say something?
Well, you moved it. You think you should?
So there has been a lot of discussion about this. I'm sure there will be more. This is based on last year's OTR for a similar position. It has been slightly revised to focus mostly solely on operations and administration within cooperative extension. I don't know how much detail I need to go into, but we're kind of recalibrating and starting over with a three-year one-time with 30,000 this year and next year, and then 15 with the understanding that in subsequent years the position will be finding grants and they will have other funding to carry this on. So I'm on the board. After talking with the board, we agreed that this would, the funding would, that we would not release the funding to them unless and until this specific position is hired. And we also agreed that there was another $30,000 that they had gotten put into their target budget last year, also to go for this position, and they will be taking that from their budget and using it also for this. So the full position for this operations effectiveness manager would be $60,000, if that makes sense. And I think those were the main things that I had talked about with the board. They had asked and hoped that maybe we would give a little bit more in this OTR, considering that the person that they tried to hire this past year did not take the position because partly because she was getting better offer at Cornell. I did consider that. I think I decided not to. If someone else wanted to amend the amendment, I would consider it. I decided not to because I then put in the OTR for the strategic plan, and I wasn't sure exactly how much y'all want to give to CCE. So I do hope that people will support this. I think that the organization needs this position, and they need an administrator higher level to kind of work on all those operations in the organization. So.
Amanda, how you've talked about conditions. Who would oversee that those conditions?
That's a good question.
Is that our administrator that would do that? Use your mic, please.
If that's a condition of this OTR, we would make sure that the money is not released until the position is filled.
Okay. Henry.
Amanda, last year, was the position that when a woman was almost hired, was that also the diversity position, too, at the same time?
Yes. So, yes. Last year, when the position came forward to folks on the legislature, it was a combined operations and diversity and inclusion. And the person that they found was, they felt, the hiring committee thought that she was like the perfect fit. And she was going to address both of those things. Unfortunately, she got an offer at Cornell and decided to go there.
They did not have a second person in mind?
They did have a second person in mind, and they decided that they did not feel that he would fulfill the diversity aspect well. So they did not want to offer him that position, as I understand it, although maybe someone from the board wants to address that more fully.
Ken Schlauder.
Hi, thank you very much for taking the time to consider this. So actually one point we did, so we did not have, the second candidate was not, we had one candidate we were ready to offer, make the offer to. The other candidates did not have any kind of a qualification near the level that we wished with respect to diversity and equity and inclusion. And we did have a person who had a strong background, a strong capability with respect to equity and inclusion, but did not have a very strong operations effectiveness piece. So, in fact, what we ended up and what we have now, so the board's decision, and they could speak to that, but the board's decision was to seek this full-time position for operations effectiveness management, and we also are continuing with a halftime leader for equity and inclusion on staff. So it's a senior level position, halftime focus on equity and inclusion, and that person will be working very closely with this position. But we came to the conclusion as we went through that search last year that it was going to be we might be back right in the same position we were again this year. That we might find one, we might get one, but we've seen it. We've talked to people at Cornell too. They're very interested in finding people in that with that same skill set. And so we don't anticipate, if we look for that position, we don't anticipate being able to keep that person there for very long. And we need some. What we know also know is that retention and is good.
Let's see. I think we had someone ahead of you, didn't we, Deborah? Or Anna, we had you.
Question then. If you are keeping the person that you have for the diversity inclusion, I'm assuming then the job description for this position will be updated to remove that component completely from this, so that it'll be focused exclusively on operations?
Yes, and the defects we did provide to Amanda a draft position description that already has that part out. So it's a focus on operations effectiveness.
Deborah.
Can I just respond?
Go ahead.
I think I did send out the description that Ken had sent me. I think it still did have some diversity inclusion parts in there. So I think, Anna, you're asking is for a fully updated one, and we can certainly make sure that happens.
Well, and I think what it was about, if I'm not mistaken, is it's essentially saying we want that person to be aware of that. But the actual work of doing that is going to be done by this other person.
So is that...
So they're going to work with that person closely.
Will that person report to this person then?
No, that person, both of them will report to the executive director.
And just a quick follow-up, who will be reporting to this person? Is this person going to essentially be a deputy director?
Almost everybody who is in admin, so almost every admin department, with the exception of finance, would be reporting to this position.
Deborah has
it's hard to hear you.
Deborah has the floor now.
I said almost every department in finance, in operations, in admin would be reporting to this position. The one exception would be finance.
Okay, thank you,
Deborah.
So I have a couple of questions. First of all, I would want to be sure that this operations effectiveness manager would have an open line of communication to whomever in the organization that he or she needs to talk to in order to do her job. I don't want to see someone who is siloed. Will we be assured of that?
Yes, I mean, so the structure, the structure of the organization would be there's a leadership team, which is made up of the program issue leaders, the people who head up the overall program for the association. That person, so this new position, the senior leader for equity and inclusion, and myself. And that's the group that meets on a regular basis. And in fact, we're actually working towards a shared leadership model. And that's
okay. And then the other piece of this is that I would like some estimate of how long it's going to take to get this person on board, because it sounds like they are badly needed. Does anybody?
So our intention is to we've been revising the position. The position we expect will actually be approved by campus, so our structure includes us having any of our position descriptions actually be approved by CC administration on campus. That should happen before the vote, the budget vote in mid-November, and the day after the budget is voted, assuming that this is in there and that the budget passes, that the position description would be advertised. And we would expect to close it right after the holidays and carry out search, the actual interviews in January.
Okay, and then just a couple more things, if I may. And I don't know if this should go to Ken or Amanda. This position is not going to have its duties broken down the way the SARI-PASCO report suggests, is it? But she had a 10% board administrative processes, 20% external outreach, 30% grants, 30% facilitation, 10% internal administration.
Yeah, no, I think that was just that was her recommendations, and the board hasn't talked about that. And I think the job description that Ken had sent is sort of the basis of it. I don't think that the idea was that SARI's report would be the bottom line, right? Yeah.
Good evening. Patrick Woods, the board president. And just want to...
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us and taking a look at this. So as far as the SARI report goes, that is something that was recommended to us. The board has started to take a look at it, but we have not decided on which parts, to accept. As you know, it's fluid, and so we'll go through, figure out based on the position description and what the second consultant provides in his report to decide as far as what percentage of time would be expected in each category. So it's not, what's down there in the report is not set in stone. That's fluid, and we're going to continue to look at it.
Okay, and then just one more thing, if I may. Now that you're looking for a person whose skill set is limited to this operations effectiveness and administration piece and doesn't require both that and the diversity and inclusion piece, do you think that you'll be able to find a person within the salary range that Amanda's request would give you, or do you still think you'll need more?
I think we can find someone, if not in that number, pretty close to that number, with the understanding that if we need to go higher, we'll have to find ways to raise money to do that through programming and grants and stuff. As Ken had mentioned before, when we did the search before, we did find people that had those skills, but they didn't have both skills that we were looking for. So I do believe that there is, if they haven't been hired since then, that there's still a number of people already on our radar for us to take a look at.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Martha Robertson.
Hi, Patrick. I appreciate the commitment by the organization to keep the diversity person there and working and sort of find resources to keep that person there. That's really important to us. And with careful monitoring and lots of communication with Jason Molino, I could support this. I think sometimes, you have laundry lists and great hopes for one person who's going to walk in and be able to do everything, and it sounds like this is a little more realistic approach. What can I understand the benefits when we fund a position, we have to sort of do math in our heads of what the fringes will cost. So in this case, this would be $60,000. Is the fringes don't have to be included in that. Is that right?
That is correct. Fringes are paid through Cornell.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
I guess you want to talk some more. Amanda, then Henry.
I was just going to add that I'm not sure if it was clear, but there is still a consultant working right now, and I think he's almost finished. He was this sort of second half. SARI did an assessment, and now Josh is doing another one, and he did give a report at the last board meeting. And I'm not sure exactly when he's done, but I assume there will be a written report that can also sort of help define the position of what this will look like, I hope, I assume.
Yes.
Henry?
Ken, you mentioned that Cornell had to approve the position. What did you mean?
So, cooperative extension is foreign. Each county can have a cooperative extension association, foreign by state law. State law says that you can have the each county can have one with two conditions. The county has to provide some support, and there has to be a memorandum of understanding for Cornell to administer the association. And what that means is Cornell sets standards with respect to how things are, how finances are managed. So some of the key operations for the organization, Cornell sets standards for that. In one of which is all positions that are hired have to be reviewed. The position description has to be reviewed and approved by Cooperative Extension Administration at Cornell. So we're separate from them, but they have that kind of oversight where they actually review every position description, make sure that it's appropriate, that the education level is appropriate, that there's a whole set of things that they look at when they look at position descriptions.
I assume they've never given you trouble with the position?
Oh, yes, many, many times.
I would say that it's, I'm Kate Supran. I'm the vice president of the board at CCE. I would say it's a little bit akin to the relationship between county civil service and the municipalities, where if you are in the town of Ithaca, the town board can say, we need this new position, and this is how we're going to fund it, and this is what the person's going to do, but you can't hire someone until that position has been reviewed and approved by civil service. So there's independence but oversight.
And
I would just add that Kate is also the former mayor of Cayuga Heights.
Never look it down.
Anyone else? Are you ready to vote?
No. I have another question.
Go ahead.
Okay. And Ken, can you please explain
Use your
to me,
mic.
Ken, can you please explain to me again how this position will be organized in terms of things like you said that this person would be in part of a group, or would this person oversee the group?
Okay. So the person will have a number of direct reports to that position. That would be the HR, HR marketing, communications, facilities management, IT. The one part of admin that it would not have, that would not be reporting directly, is finance. So finance and this person would still be reporting to the executive director position. And then there is a leadership team, which is made up of the issue leaders for the program areas, so the program leadership of the organization, combined with this position, combined with the diversity, equity, and inclusion position, and the executive director position. That group makes up the leadership team. And so they work together making decisions about larger issues with respect to the association.
Okay.
Shared leadership on there, but that person is responsible and accountable for most of admin.
Okay, so this person would not oversee diversity and inclusion then?
Correct.
And finance, they would not.
Correct.
The other departments, they would not oversee?
They would oversee all of the rest of admin. They don't oversee program. Right? Program is separate. Programming is considered as a separate thing. So admin, and think of it in terms of college. You have a provost and a president, or an executive, very often an executive vice president. Those two, the executive vice president runs operations, provost runs academics. And in our association, we have program leaders who have senior leadership roles in the organization who help, among all things, drive that's the reason for the organization is for programming. And then we also have administration, which is there to obviously keep the organization running. And those two together work together to actually make the organization move forward. Sammy?
Ken, I'm going to invite you to the seat at the front of the room. Should have done that to begin with, because we have four different over-targets out of your department, your agency, rather. And that way we won't have to have folks craning their necks to talk. All right, so anyone else want to speak on this over target? Are we ready to vote? Again, It's a $30,000, this is a three-year, multi-year, $30,000 in 2019, $15,000 in 2020, $30,000 in 2019 and 2020, and $15,000 in 2021.
Hi.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I wanted to just make sure that we did say it would, the money will go into the contingent fund until the person is hired, or what is that?
It will be released until the position is hired.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the funding won't be released until the position is filled.
Okay, thank you.
We'll coordinate with extension as to when they fill the position.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Leslie.
Just as a follow-up, when the job description is developed, that is something that we'll have an opportunity to see? Or thank you.
Okay, ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? We have two opposed. That carries. All right, we have another one. This is number 24 from Amanda Champion, also having to do with the Cornell Cooperative Extension. And this is a $15,000 one-time funding. This is for a strategic plan redesign for CCETC. Amanda?
I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion, Amanda?
Yeah, so this was something that actually came up from a conversation I had with Jason, and I asked Ken about their strategic plan, and he can explain more, but the way I understood it was that the statewide CCE is redoing their strategic plan this year, and then next year the various counties, the local CCEs, redo theirs, kind of to work along with that. So that would be next year. So I thought that they could potentially use some money to make that happen.
Anyone else? Dan?
I'm going to vote against this one. I'm going to vote for all the other cooperative extension amendments here. I know this is not like a popular thing to say, but I just don't have a lot of faith in strategic plans in general. I find that more often than not, people know what needs to happen, the employees, the board, stakeholders, consumers, they know what needs to happen. And putting together a strategic plan doesn't come up with something new. It's just kind of a process that doesn't necessarily produce anything valuable. So it's not personal for cooperative extension. I'm just going to be voting against this.
Anna?
So thank you for that background. And I'm trying to understand, was this something you were planning on doing anyway, or... And all counties are doing it?
So, as Amanda said, every 5 years, cooperative extension at the state level does a strategic plan. Certainly Tompkins has always waited till the year after. And not all associations do follow up the following year, but most do. So once the state has released a strategic plan, we then follow through with our own strategic planning process. And we did our last one 5 years ago, which was the year after cooperative extension at the state level did theirs. We did one 10 years ago. And in fact, usually what we've done, at least in the last 20 years, is there have been, on the 10-year mark, there's been a fairly significant strategic planning effort that's done. So 10 years ago, we did one with using concept mapping, and we talked with over 400 people in it was 11 years ago that we did it. We talked with over 400 people in the county, used concept mapping software to help determine what we should do. And actually, out of that, the board, because we had such an overwhelming amount of environmental issues that came to the fore, that's actually the time that the board decided to actually add a program area called environment. So our energy and environment program grew right out of the strategic planning exercise that took place 11 years ago. And now this next year would be the time when we would do a substantial strategic planning exercise. This next one, we're really interested in exploring community cafes, which we've been, our organization has been the group that's been training most of the groups that have been doing community cafes, but also adding in scenario planning, which if you've looked at some things, the scenario planning is considered to be quite useful, especially in times of great uncertainty. And so the exercise that we're expecting to do is useful for not just for this organization, but it would be something that we could then work with other people to train them as well.
So quick follow-up to that, Mike.
Go ahead.
How have you paid for it in the past then? And were you planning on doing it anyway next year? Was it part of your strategic, your work plan for next year?
We will be, if we paid for it the last time through funding through private donations that we raised. And we, if we don't get funding here tonight, we will continue to look for funding in some other way to get this, to have it done. Yes.
Thank you.
Let's go to Leslie.
Thank you. The second half of what Anna asked, I wanted to ask. And Amanda, I just want to check in with you. You were saying that you just thought that they could use some money. Is this something that the Board of Cooperative Extension asked you for or asked for, or this was just your idea?
No.
It's fine either way. I'm just asking.
Yeah. No, the Board did not ask me. I was talking to Jason, and it came up, and then I sent an email asking about the plan situation, and, yeah, I just thought this might be a good way to help them focus, help maybe get back on track. Yeah, thank you.
Martha?
Well, I just, it's interesting you mentioned that the environmental focus came out of the last, you said the 10 years ago strategic plan?
11 or 12.
Okay.
11,
yeah. Got an email from Gary Stewart today of Cornell. Not sure how many others got it. That Cornell has been recognized by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and Center for Resource Solutions, recognized for the more than 30 Cornell Cooperative Extension of Tompkins County. Why, it just went away. Wait. Oh, man. I went to one of the websites instead. Anyway, it was just, you just got this award for the programs that you guys do. The more than 30 Cornell Cooperative Extension of Tompkins County Educational Programs Advancing Statewide Renewable Energy Adoption. And it mentions Solar Tompkins, Heat Smart Tompkins, Clean Energies Community, a whole bunch of things. So it's interesting that you mentioned that. Now, that said, I would support this if it's not just a program review. What programs are we interested in? What programs should we enhance? Or is there anything we want to let go? I want to hear about that you delved into the structure of the organization. And, for example, the structure of employment. I'm a little bit, I mean, I'll vote for the OTR on managing and leveraging interns, but I hear on the one hand you have a severe space problem in the building, and then we got an OTR so you can manage, like, I don't know, a couple dozen interns. I feel like part-time employment has become like your strategy. Maybe I'm overstating this, but it feels like you end up with a lot of people working less than full time. Maybe one of your space problems has to do with having a lot of people doing jobs that you could have fewer people doing full time. So I want to see, and that's just my from the outside looking in.
I mean,
summary, so I want to see this strategic planning process to look at that kind of an issue as well as other things you might normally look at, if that makes any sense.
Sure, and we actually do look at, so the way that we do our strategic planning is form follows function. So once we know what it is that we're after, then we would basically start looking at how we should be organized to do that. But I do want to say, speak to your point about employment, because, in fact, we have more full-time employees now than we've ever have, well, not, I mean, in the last, not this right now, but if you look at 2016 to 2018, we have more full-time employees now than we've had ever in our history. And we also happen to have more part-time employees now than we did before. We also look at, though, at part-time employment as a strategy for skill development. And many, many people who worked for us have gone on and worked elsewhere with full-time positions, having picked up skills that they got directly as a result of having worked with us. And that's a strategy for us because we're an educational organization. And one of our strategies for actually helping people learn and grow is to hire them to work on things and to learn ways of doing that help them in their subsequent jobs.
Yeah, I'm not asking for an answer now, but I appreciate that. I'm just asking that kind of an issue be really part of this look.
Noted.
Well, okay. Thank
I guess
you.
I feel a little differently. I think that you have a board and you have management, and I think a plan, it's not up to this board to micromanage that, but you've asked us to help you fund it, and we have to decide whether or not to fund it. Ann Corman.
Thank you. Ken, so where would the $15,000 go? Would that go to somebody that's doing consultation?
I have a list here.
Okay.
It would be needed for licensing the concept system software, for training staff, for training and staff development in scenario planning, development. One of the things I didn't mention is the use of directories and websites as ways to gather information on, so doing analytics on websites to help identify particular areas that people are voting with their feet, in a sense, or voting with their clicks and their eyes, and for food, room rental, and other costs associated with the community cafes.
Thank you.
Henry.
You had the other woman who went to Cornell do a report about your systems. And Amanda said you had another consultant. What was that consultant for?
So when we no longer had, I'm actually not sure if somebody else would want to speak to this, but when the person turned down the job, we then said, okay, so what do we do right now? We've got these urgent needs. And so the first thing we did, the board agreed to, we basically, the decision at the board meeting was to have two consultants. The first one being the person who had turned down the position, for her to focus a little bit, and some of you have seen the report, I guess. The first was to focus on equity and inclusion in the environment in the organization with respect to equity and inclusion. And the second one, and that person was going to be there for 3 weeks. And so the second consultant was contracted to look more closely at operations effectiveness. And so that person has spent the last 4 months both looking at examining priority areas for change and also working on a number of systems that were identified as needing change, needing improvement. So that person's been working on those as well. Out of that report, the intention had been to look at both of those reports together, for the board to look at both those reports together, and out of that then make decisions about what should actually happen with the organization in terms of operations effectiveness.
Kate Supran, did you want to add to that?
How did you guess? It was lurking. So when the position was, we had this, perfect candidate, and she wasn't able to take the job, and the board knew what our objective had been and the goals that we were trying to reach, and one of the things we could have done was just reposted the job and tried again. But we thought that that would actually impede the progress we could make towards meeting some of the objectives that we'd set out to meet during the year. So that's why we went with the consulting approach, was that we wanted to move forward in an efficient fashion and gather the information we needed to reshape, perhaps, or to consider whether we needed to reshape the OEM position, or what's now being called the OEM position, and how to do it. And it gave us additional information. The first consultant helped to give structure to what the second consultant, who's been there longer term, has been looking at, and helped the board feel more confident as we come to you today to ask for funding for, or as we already asked and you said yes, for the OEM position. I also think the strategic plan supports the work that the board has started with the consultants, because it's all, as I think it was Martha said, you know, it's not just about the interns and the programs. It's about how to improve and organize and structure the CCE organization as a whole to improve our operations and our services to our customers. But we need to know what the grand vision is that we're trying to meet. And in that end, to that end, being able to reach out to folks in the community to get their input in the strategic planning process would be really helpful.
Thank you. Are we ready to vote? Go ahead, Henry.
Also, so when is that report going to be due?
We're expecting it momentarily.
Okay.
I mean, within, if not this week, next week.
Oh, okay. And also, you said that the statewide CCE has filed its strategic plan already.
They're in the process of finalizing it now. The state has been carrying their process out for this past year,
okay,
and they're expecting to release it sometime in the next month to 6 weeks.
Okay.
All right. So this is on the over-target, one-time money, $15,000 for CCE's one-time funding for the strategic plan redesign. Those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That fails. Let's move on. The next one is for CCE as well. This is by Shauna Black and Deborah Dawson. This is a removal of funding, over target funding. Remove recommended funding for 4-H acres upgrades and repairs, a reduction of $96,000 in one-time money. Is there someone want to move that? Shauna?
So Deborah and I would actually like to withdraw.
Okay.
Is there any way that we can also make a statement?
I'll let you make a statement.
Okay.
Which do you want to do first? Withdraw it or
I'll
make
withdraw
a statement?
First. Yeah.
Right.
Set the tone.
It's withdrawn.
Okay.
Go ahead, make your statement.
Yes. Deborah and I are prepared to support funding for the 4-H repairs, but first we'd like to record a short statement. This has been a long budget season. Many of us have learned about the budget for the first time, and we have been faced with making many hard decisions. A few weeks ago, when I looked at the budget and saw the funding being asked for by CCE, we were a bit shocked to see so many OTRs. During the presentation, there was a list of wants with little to no documentation. Unlike the dozens of other presentations we saw from other organizations and departments, CCEs lacked pictures, estimates, blueprints, and any other type of supporting information that would make our decision easy. I made the amendment based on the fact that in good faith, I couldn't approve $96,000 that was being requested for CCE without supporting information. Wednesday morning, I called the executive director and told him I would like to see a quote and pictures. The phone call was amicable, and I made myself very clear that once the information was received, that I would not support the amendment and I would support the funding. The director told me he would have the information to me over the next few days, and he did. Later that same morning, I received the quote of renovations and a list. This wasn't just a bathroom renovation. This was siding, roof, HVAC, plumbing, and many other items. Clearly, a justified list. By afternoon, I spoke with the chair of 4-H, and she said that she would provide the pictures. Again, I told her the same thing I told Ken. Once I get the pictures, I will support the funding. By 4:30 Wednesday, I had received an email from the director of Primitive Pursuits and addressing me as a parent of two children that had gone to camp at 4-H. The email went on to talk about how the legislature was going to take away funding from 4-H. By the time I went to bed, I had received emails and Facebook posts questioning my intentions from constituents and friends. As a legislator, it is my job to make sure that when I'm voting on spending your tax money, that it is fiscally responsible. When any organization asks for almost $100,000, we must ask for quotes, invoices, pictures, and blueprints. It is the job of every single presenter to make their case when presenting a one-time request. After speaking with the Director of Primitive Pursuits, along with the 4 constituents, 3 Facebook posts, and 2 non-constituents, they understand the importance of this process. In the future, I hope it gets easier. As legislators, we should all expect thought-out and researched presentations that include all information we need so that we can make intelligent decisions. Thank you.
Okay. That's, I guess, takes care of that one. Let's move on to number 29, Dave McKenna and Anna Kellis. This is also to Cornell Cooperative Extension. It's new. It's $62,000 one time for space expansion project for CCE using shipping containers to increase storage and classroom space. Who wants to move that? David? Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Discussion. Who wants to go first? Dave?
Basically, this project's been going on for over a year. Unfortunately, we got tied into some contractors that were a little bit shady and ended up costing us a lot of money and a lot of time. The time was probably even more important than the money as far as I'm concerned, but nevertheless, it was a problem, and I'm going to ask Ken to go into the details of it because I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure he can go over them later.
The details of the actual this upcoming project or the
project and the issues that we have with it.
So I'm going to start with the project. This basically the basic idea with the use of shipping containers. When we first began talking about this with our architect, he didn't think that there would be much in the way of cost savings. And then as it turns out, as he started doing some numbers, He came back and said, you know what? He says, actually, this would save us between $250,000 and $300,000. This is for the expansion that we're proposing to do. So we have plans for an expansion that we actually had finalized almost 2 years ago, and but before we started with the actual work. The board and I all thought that it would be far better for us to test out the concept with a contractor on a much smaller scale, which is this shipping container storage and classroom unit that's in front of you now, or that we're discussing right now. And so we put it out to bid. We got a bid from a firm in Rochester. They began the work, and it fell apart, essentially. We spent the last year basically in courts, and so all of the effort with respect to doing anything about the expansion also came to a halt because we didn't have the funds to actually to do this twice, essentially, for the shipping container storage unit. So we do have a final judgment, a summary judgment against the contractor. It's not clear whether we'll get any funds from that, but we do have a summary judgment. The contractor is likely to declare bankruptcy, but we don't have that yet, and it's not happened. So where we're at right now is we have the opportunity to we know of 3 contractors locally. We'll be putting this out to bid. We already know of 3 contractors who actually do have some experience now and would like to have the chance to bid on this project, to ship the shipping container storage and classroom project. The one that would win this, we would expect, would basically work with us on this larger expansion, although that too would be bid out at that time. The shipping containers themselves, the other part that's really important about this is it allows the expansion to take place
really quickly. So when we get to the expansion stage, the work on those containers can all be done elsewhere, and then the containers are basically brought in and connected on site. So an expansion that might have taken 6 months or so to do, the actual expansion itself, the actual construction, should take just several weeks to a month. The other part is that the part of the reason that we were interested in the shipping containers is it also allows for us to build a much tighter building. And so energy efficiency-wise, it helps us significantly. And then finally, this basically offers, you know, if it is successful, we'll have right here in Ithaca or in Tompkins County a model for people who can actually walk through this, decide whether this makes sense for them. There's a lot of interest in using this for homes. Those homes can become more affordable, but also it has real value, potential impact for commercial building. So the ability to actually have right here a commercial building example that is relatively low cost, that is highly efficient energy-wise, and can be built relatively quickly, It opens up a whole new sector for commercial building and residential construction. So that's the promise that's there. And it certainly in terms of, but we can't get there until we actually test out this process, which is what we're asking to do tonight.
Anna.
I guess this is a process of trying to convince the legislature for this right now for a lot of reasons. One, after reading the PASCO report, there was a whole list of things that need to be addressed in the building itself. So I think there's, I would imagine, my first reaction was, maybe we should wait until all of those things are taken care of and then reassess what the actual space needs are. But I wanted to bring this onto the floor to have an actual clear conversation about it so that you could explain, what that process would look like to address some of the things that she recommended, whether you were planning on approving, I don't know, because the board's still reviewing some of those things. I know that. I respect that. How does that fit in with this? Are they different needs? So that was one piece, and then I have another question.
So first, storage, if you've been in our building and walked in the, just walk in the hall, you'll see a real need for storage. There's stuff that's there in the hallway that shouldn't be in the hallway. It should be somewhere else on site. We have a lot of stuff, a lot of things that people use in their programming that they use on a relatively frequent basis, as in they use it more than once every several months. So it doesn't really, it would make it, it's impractical for them to store it off-site, which is what, we can do if we're storing, if we have stuff that we're only using once every 6 months. We have storage actually at 4-H Acres, and we store stuff there at 4-H Acres. But if somebody needs stuff every month or 2 months to store it and then have to go to the Acres to get it each time they need to use it, it would be fairly expensive. So we do need storage, and this provides storage. That actually by itself will make a huge difference in terms of what we need space-wise in the building. I think Dan can attest to that. The second piece is, even over the last, certainly since we started doing an electronic room sign-out for meeting room space about 12, 15 years ago. And at that time, we had about 2,000 meetings a year in those meeting rooms. It's now nearly 5,000 meetings. Many of those are classes that actually have compost and soil and plants and things like that, which typically you would have those held in some what would be called a dirty classroom, a room that can get dirty that you can clean it relatively easily. And that's the second thing that this storage unit and dirty classroom would actually have. So it meets two of our immediate space needs. Plus, it also, as I said, gives us a chance to prove, gives us a chance to understand whether we can actually build the expansion with containers.
And so, my second question, just to understand, is the reason that you didn't
when you were having the initial budget meetings with Jason, I think it would have been with Jason, initially, about your needs for CCE, is the reason that you didn't add this to the list because because it was still under litigation and you weren't sure whether or not you were actually going to get the development with the existing contractor or whether you'd get the money for that, or is that why this came in so late?
There were a lot of unanswered questions with respect to the lawsuit and whether we were going to get the containers and what we should do about the containers. Yes. So it didn't seem like we could really go forward at that time because we didn't see an end in sight with respect to litigation.
Mm-hmm. And when did you find out about that decision by the judge?
So that decision was made in May, but at the beginning of May. But it's the piece around there's a second issue, which was the first contractor was actually carrying out all of his work on somebody else's parking lot. And so we then ended up in a second lawsuit connected to the fight that was happening between those two people.
So you had to wait for that fight to happen before you knew what
we
was going
to
happen.
We actually had to extract ourselves from that fight. So we were actually brought into it ourselves. So.
And final question about that. What's the final word? Where does that stand right now?
So what we have is we have a summary judgment. What we don't know, what we don't know is whether we will get any damage, any compensation for that, for the fact that the contract wasn't completed, that we had spent a significant amount of money on the containers. The containers were being worked on, and we don't have the containers, and we may not get any funding.
But you won the lawsuit.
But we won the lawsuit. Yes. So the problem is will this person be declaring bankruptcy or not?
Martha?
I want to be helpful here, but are there – I haven't seen any – to Sean and Deborah's comment on the previous one, I haven't seen any kind of drawings or bids or anything. Dave, did – somebody said – Dave sent that information, but I haven't seen it. No?
Wyatt actually sent via email to all of the legislators the pictures as well as the invoices.
Of 4-H acres?
Yeah. Right.
No.
About the
containers.
We got something. I got blueprints.
Yeah, we got blueprints, specs.
Okay, I don't remember seeing it. If it was on my Gmail, it's too buried. But, okay. Jason, did you see any of this?
I haven't had any discussions about it. I might have briefly looked at some of the emails, but I haven't gone. It's been a very brief overview of it. I haven't had any in-depth discussions or substantive discussions about it.
Okay. I mean, I appreciate the need. I will say we almost held onto the old library for the sake of storing documents. And 15 years ago, our county clerk said, well, we'll just start scanning things and shredding them.
We do that.
I understand, but I guess I'm persuaded by what somebody took a hard look and said, maybe can find space where you didn't know that you had it. So I'm not going to support this. I feel like... That's a lot of money, and I'm this whole story doesn't quite work for me. So,
Rich John,
you know I do want to support CCE, and I thank you, Shauna and Deborah, for digging on the 4-H that helped me vote yes. This one it seems like it could have been presented in a way that we'd feel a lot more comfortable about it. I've had extensive conversations with my colleagues. Dave, you've given me assurance this is something that's needed and it'll work. I'm going to support, but I sure hope this is a learning experience that, you know, we get earlier and more thorough information. It would really help us. But It made it probably a lot harder than it needed to be.
Leslie.
Rich, well, thank you. I'm where you are, but I'm not sure I can support it because I'm still not following what's going on. Like, what? Ken, I'm having a hard time understanding expanding the building with shipping containers. Like, I'm truly not following this. I don't know if it's something that we can park and revisit later. I have no idea. But this one is, I'm having a real hard time understanding what's going on with this, and I can't support it if I don't know what's going on.
Deborah.
Well, I love architecture. And so I've seen a lot of what can be done with these shipping containers. And I'm really excited at the possibility that we could do some of that here. But it is experimental. And there are some issues about the lawsuit and everything else that leave me queasy. I would like to vote for this. I would offer an amendment to
amendment.
The amendment is that we put this money in contingency until we get a firm plan about how it's going to be used, at which point we can really evaluate what's going on.
So I have, is that a second, Ann? Okay. Well, so I think, as I understand the amendment.
Might be friendly.
Just a minute. I can ask that, but let me just make sure everyone understands what's being asked here, that instead of authorizing the expenditure of these funds outright, you're saying put the money into our contingent fund with a designation for this project that would require another vote from this legislature to expend it.
On addition, you know, with the benefit of additional information. And I think also that would give CCE time to pursue this cleansing ritual that Ms. Pasco recommended, and then they would have a better sense of what they need.
So they're asking, is this friendly? Dave and Anna, is it friendly?
No.
All right, then we'll proceed to take comment on the amendment. Then moved by Deborah, seconded by Ann. Ann?
I actually got an email, I don't know if it was from someone, about, you know, with the diagram and some information. It sounds like some people didn't get that. So that's why I'm seconding that, so that people have more time to get that information and take a look at it. We didn't have it originally, and we didn't have a formal proposal. So I think this is a... I think before people vote on actually spending the money, they need more information.
Amanda?
So I'm just trying to clarify your amendment. What information are we looking for, and when would we decide? Like, I guess I'm not clear what you're suggesting.
Well, I guess I'd want some more specific information about pricing and a site plan and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
The usual stuff that you get when you're going to build something.
Okay.
Anna?
A couple things. Just about the shipping containers, just to clarify, we're relatively used to modular homes and trailers.
This is on the amendment.
This is on the amendment. I'm just clarifying so that we're all on the same page of what this is, in fact, that we're talking about. So if people haven't seen the idea of the shipping container, is that you're starting with an existing frame, and then you're cutting out windows and you're putting in insulation, but you're starting with a frame just like a modular home. So it's been done throughout Europe, throughout the United States. I mean, it's been done. I've seen stuff from 15 years ago. It's pretty well documented. Phenomenal pictures if you just Google it.
Uh-huh.
So that's one thing. The other thing, if I recall, I saw an email that you did get a site plan review from the city already, and they did approve, correct?
So
that's just so that we know, because I did see that email.
And we obtained
and we, so we've obtained estimates. So we had, we before the first bidding process, we had obtained an, we had worked out an estimate. The bids came in. The bid came in at the number that we were, right around the number that we were expecting. In fact, I think it came in slightly lower. We've this time again we worked with AccuFab and another contractor here locally to scope out what this project would be and what it would cost. They came in with an estimate that was about $62,000.
And that's what you gave to us, and that's the email. And just the last thing that I wanted to say for the group, there's two mechanisms. We can put it in contingent, but we have until the day we vote on this final budget to vote on any OTRs. So I just wanted to let people know that that if people feel that the only reason that they can't vote for this is because they haven't read that email or seen the specs or seen all the documentation, read the email that was sent to us by Henry, if I recall, or Dave, I can't remember which one, about the site plan, the city plan already happening, and people want to delay and vote on this at a later meeting, that's a possibility as well. I'm just putting it out there.
All right. I have Martha, Rich, Dan.
I mean, I appreciate that Henry and Dave and Amanda and everybody are trying to do the work for the executive director of this organization. If this has been a project in the works for 2 years, I'm completely befuddled as to why this didn't get in Jason's hands in time to have it put into the budget. What? What?
It's, we're talking about, I'm sorry, two different things. There's the container small project, then there's for storage in a small classroom, and then the whole lawsuit, and the other thing was for bigger expansions.
No, what, it wasn't. No, you got it wrong.
We're talking. I'm sorry, folks. What's, we're talking about an amendment to a motion that's on the floor.
Okay, right. And the project, and see, we can't even all agree on what the project is. We just said, go ahead and spend $100,000 on 4-H acres. Next year, come back to us if you still haven't. I'm really, the more I hear about this, the less impressed I am. And, you know, I know I was on the, I was liaison like 16 years ago, and the previous director was talking about a capital campaign for an expansion 16 years ago. It seems this is within the capacity of this organization that has thousands of supporters around the county. It is not the way we do things to throw stuff at legislators at the very last minute. I wish I could be more patient here, but I can't.
Rich?
I'm sure it's my fault that I didn't see this email. Who sent the email? Does anybody know when it was sent?
Which one you were talking about, Rich?
With the prices and the sketches, blueprints?
I didn't send that one. I think I sent that one.
I can't find it, but I'm sure it's my fault I overlooked it. But I
know I have.
Give me a hint.
I know I have it someplace, okay, because I've seen it. But I'm not sure that I sent it out to everybody.
Okay. Ann Klein.
Ken, if we were to vote yes tonight and release this money, what's your rough timeline, you think?
We would like to put this out to bid as soon as possible and actually carry out the work this fall if we can get it done. If we'd like to work on it this fall, and if it turns out that the weather doesn't hold, then we would do it the first thing in spring as soon as it can be done.
This money would be in the 2019 budget.
Right, and we would. And we'd be paying the contractor after, you know, this won't be done until close to the end of the year anyway.
So if this amendment passes and then the main motion passes so that we've approved the money but it's not quite ready yet, can you comment on how that will affect your timeline? What I hear people ask for is a fuller set of plans. We're talking maybe another month or something like that before the final vote.
Well, that would affect the timeline in terms of putting this out to bid. But it would mean basically that we would probably not get this thing started until spring, early spring.
Thank you.
Ann has some news.
October 2nd is the email from, it came from Anna Kellis.
Yes.
Sorry, I was just looking for it right now.
I tried to resend it, but I might not have sent it with the document, but it's October 2nd from Anna.
So that was what you were going to say, Henry?
Yes.
All right. Are we ready to vote on this amendment? The amendment is to make as part of the main motion that the money would be held in contingency until we received further information, planning plans, and other things, and the board would have to vote to release it. Ready to vote. All those in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That fails. We're back to the main motion. The motion is the $62,000 one-time money. Are we ready to vote? No, I guess not. Dan?
My comment will be quick. So I did work at Cooperative Extension for a number of years, and there just is a need for storage. It's not really laziness on their part or something like that. It's not a lot of papers. A lot of the programs that Cooperative Extension does are physical programs with plants and food products and just all kinds of stuff. So undoubtedly, you know, some room could be made by tidying up, but it's not going to open up space for large amounts of space to the building. I think something really needs to be done about creating more space. This is a plan. It's a relatively inexpensive plan, and I'm going to support it.
Henry?
Ken, I asked you before about a needs assessment, whether you'd done one, and what was your response to me?
I don't remember.
Okay, you talked about the shed?
Yes, thank you. we had a storage unit there. We had a storage shed there. It was a building that had actually been there when Cooperative Extension bought the building in 1986, and it was an old building. It eventually basically wore out. We had to take it down. The intention had been to replace it practically immediately because that building was actually as big as the one that the construction that we're talking about now, and it was full at that time. So the storage needs have been there. In fact, much of the stuff that we would put in storage, in addition to some of the things that we store in the hallway that we store because they need to be kept out of the rain. We also keep a lot of stuff outside that really shouldn't be out in the rain, but that's where it needs to be kept because we have no other space for it.
Can I follow up?
Oh, go ahead, Henry.
You gave me copies of the lawsuit that you had. I assume that the defendant did not participate in the hearing whatsoever.
Basically, the defendant lost four attorneys, quit the case over time, but there was enough. That was the attorneys did their job, which was they delayed for quite a while.
And why do you think the company is going to file bankruptcy?
Because they have no assets. Because it looks like this is what they do. We don't know for sure, but it's like they. That's what they're threatening, essentially.
That's what they're threatening. Okay. And what was the other lawsuit about? The debate between.
So the firm that was doing the contractor was working with us, allegedly had an arrangement with the parking lot owner where these containers are actually being worked on, and then that person, the contractor, did not pay the parking lot owner, and the contractor then sent us a bill for the amount of money that was more than the amount of money that was owed for the parking lot usage by that by the contractor, and then the parking lot owner then basically sued the contractor as well as us, because supposedly those containers were ours and were on that property.
All right. I have Amanda, Anna, Martha. Then let's get to a vote.
I am really struggling with this one because I get it that space is needed. Like, I get it. I definitely get it. But I have to go with Martha on this. I think that, you know, I just wish it had come up earlier and not as a last-minute thing. I have to say that some of my experience at the board is that things come up very last minute, and I find it hard to, you know, process deciding on a new project or, you know, and my I sometimes get the sense that things are a little bit last minute. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm going to support this.
Anna?
I hear what everybody has to say. I hope we don't deliberate too much longer on this. I know you're calling it soon, Mike, which I appreciate. I mean, essentially what I'm hearing is you had a project last year that you came to us for. It ended up in a really long lawsuit. You didn't find out about the final conclusion until when I spoke to you sometime in July or August. I don't remember when it was. You sent me, when I asked for it, the blueprints. I apologize, everybody, that I forgot that it was me that asked for them and sent them out to you. It's been a really long month. But if you look at the actual specs, it is as detailed as what was sent for 4-H. It's got a breakdown by, like, some of the breakdown is down to $500. Every single 60 of the 62,000 is accounted for. There are specs. You've gotten the city approval for zoning. You've got pretty much everything you need. It didn't come in the right time. People can make the decisions that they want, but we really pretty much have all the information that we would need. So I'll support it.
Martha?
Okay, in the time since I went and got my laptop, I went to the Lowe's website. Look, I don't mean to be snippy, but I see unconditioned storage here, 151 square feet, right? But like two of them. That's like the messy storage, right? I mean, here's a metal single car garage for $2,021. You walk into, you know, any of our big boxes and you walk past these storage, you know, plug and play. I'm puzzled. I don't get why $62,000 is needed here. Okay, I know one of them is a classroom. I'm not going to support this. It's obvious, right?
I'll indulge Kate Supran, who had her hand up.
I'm really sorry. I know that everyone's ready to move on.
Please be brief.
So I'll be brief just in terms, I mean, I know that you, Martha, referenced being on the board and that you know that, or as a liaison, and that you know that this has been going on for quite some time. And the time period of that, probably from when you were the liaison, the budget of CCE has gone from $1.6 million to $8 million, from 28,000 people a year served to 72,000 people a year served through CCE programs. The staff, the full-time staff, has gone from 38 full-time staff to 90 full-time staff. So there has been phenomenal growth in the number of people there and in the change in the ratio of admin staff to program staff, so the people who are working to deliver those programs. The idea that I think Ken said, it's not just about storage. It's a well-thought-out plan that has been, it has been considered, even though, as Anna says, it's coming to you all late, on piloting a way to address the overall storage needs or the overall space needs of the organization of CCE, which I think these numbers demonstrate are critical. And as your experience, as you know, this has been coming for a long time. And sometimes
right. So
it takes a long time to get to a point where you can move forward. And getting a storage shed from Lowe's is not going to demonstrate anything about how to address the overall needs of space at CCE.
Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Martha, anything further?
So if you had that many staff people, one of them could have had time to put together a proposal to get it into Jason on time.
Okay, we're going to vote. Again, this is one-time funding, $62,000 to Cornell Cooperative Extension for space expansion project for CCE using shipping containers to increase storage and classroom space. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That passes. Okay, our next item. Thank you very much, Ken.
Thank you. Thank you all very much
for coming tonight and helping us with our decisions. We're going to turn to Michael Sigler, who has put in a new over target to the Planning and Sustainability Department of $50,000. One-time funding of $50,000 for a park fund to be administered by the Department of Planning and Sustainability in conjunction with the Strategic Tourism Planning Board grants. Each town and village in Tompkins County may apply for one grant of up to $5,000 from the park fund for infrastructure planning improvements to its publicly managed or supported parks. Mike, are you moving that?
I am moving that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Let's open it to discussion. Mike?
No, I just wanted to say, you know, I wanted to put this in so I could buy some shipping containers. My bunker is made from those. So it's fantastic. No, this is what we talked about before. I mean, I would have preferred the block a grant approach, but other people didn't. So this is what's kind of hatched this out with Deborah and with Dave, and this, I think, works pretty well as well. So say I'm the, you know, town of Groton or, you know, town of Ithaca. I want to redo some trail signage in the town of Ithaca. You know, that's going to cost me $15,000. I put in. I say this is what we're planning to do. It's going to cost $15,000. We would like to, you know, if you guys could supply $5,000 for this signage, great. And then we just needed somebody to evaluate it. I figured STPB would probably be the best since they already kind of do this job when it comes to, you know, citizen events and things throughout the county. They already have a framework in place. And we'll run it through planning. Did talk to planning today about it, and Katie's like, you know, if that's the will of the legislature, then we can certainly make it work. So that's where we are.
I think I have Shauna, then Dan, then Deborah.
I think this is a great idea. I'm very happy that you brought it forward, Mike. I think the town will definitely be able to use the $5,000. I know that Enfield probably will, and Newfield, and but there are a lot of things that some of our smaller communities, such as Enfield, Newfield has a new ballpark, and they really need some funds, and Enfield would really love that garden, too. So I think it's wonderful.
Dan?
So some questions. The Strategic Tourism Planning Board piece of it, can you, I mean, maybe you don't know a little more at this point, but is it going to be like a new committee then that reviews this particular?
That'll be up to them. I mean, like I said, the reason I was thinking there, I mean, if planning says, you know what, no, I think we should do this over here with a new committee, you know, I'll take any input from Katie and her crew that that they want to offer. But, I mean, STPB, does they have a framework already in place for this, so I would think that they would be able to handle this. I mean, it's $50,000 one-time money. When the money's gone, so it's not like this. I don't envision this as an ongoing.
Can I address Dan's? Dan's question, because I made some changes to what Mike had originally written. Mike was going to give it to STPB. I wasn't sure if STPB should or even could administer this because it was not hotel money. So that's why it's written the way it is, that it will be managed by planning and sustainability in conjunction with STPB, because I was thinking that Nick is probably the best person to do this, since this is similar to what STPB does. But if planning and sustainability thinks it belongs somewhere else, then I certainly defer to them because they know their business far better than I do.
I guess, again, I realize you don't have all the details worked out, but I mean, one of the ways that STPB works is they have committees reviewing certain grants and they pay someone to do the review. So that's what I'm trying to build into, make sure that we're not giving some more money to somebody else to now administer the grants like the other ones are. So maybe you can't answer that right now, but just please be aware of that.
But I don't know which grant. I'm envisioning more of the...
It's planning and sustainability, not STPB.
Okay, well, just please be aware of that as you go through this process. Okay, also, it says fund for infrastructure planning slash improvement. So that means literally if somebody wants to put in a swing set in their park, is that that's yep. game by this? Okay. Not all the towns have parks. So are we going to interpret this liberally? And I'm sorry to use that word in a sentence to you. So, for instance, town of Caroline is looking at doing a trail. Could that potentially fall into this? I mean, how will we deal with the towns that don't have formal parks?
Caroline doesn't have formal parks.
No.
What's up with that
now
town?
Now I can get one.
Yeah. 5,000 is not going to get you very far. Yeah. Danby doesn't really have one either. Danby has
before,
a
the town of Ithaca. If they want to, you know, I picked trail signage okay. because that was something easy, kind of in the price range. But yeah, that's what I envisioned. So.
Great, thank you.
Anna, Martha, Rich.
I just wanted to get a little further detail on your conversation with Katie and okay. the planning department about what they said about this.
They said that they could handle it. She said, you know, if the legislature wants to, you know, have a program like this, that they could accommodate. So I made it clear that it was like $50,000 one-time money, though, that I didn't envision this going forward. I did say, you know, if it's really successful, I don't know what the legislature is going to do in the future. And she said, yeah.
Martha?
I guess I would want to know. So this should probably go through PDEC. I mean, I agree with the idea, and I'm interested in it being low maintenance, low, you know, not complicated. But it's also like, so we got, you'd need a deadline. There are 9 towns outside the city, so that doesn't divide into 50 easily.
6 villages, too.
Right. Then if you got 15, then up there. So the math isn't quite right if you're going to do the same.
They don't have to all get 5,000.
Okay, but that also means somebody's weighing if you got more requests than the 50,000 adds up to. So
that's what people wanted. Oversight.
Do you want to add more?
No, I mean, that's where I know Mike's proposal about sort of the 23,000 was just kind of figure out by population and kind of hand it out without a lot of fussing. So I guess I'm in support. I have questions about it, but I mean, I think it's a good idea. But I'm confused, obviously. Maybe I'm tired.
I'd be happy to raise a number if your math makes you happy.
I think this is a better proposal, Mike, than what we first looked at, and I'm inclined to support. I had a couple questions. It's clearly not labor for lawn mowing.
Right.
Is it lawnmowers? Is it equipment? I'd like to stay away from equipment. I think municipalities should buy their own equipment. This should be differences that people who come into the parks should see.
I think you're going to have to specify what type of equipment you're objecting to, because equipment could come under a swing set. That's a piece of equipment.
I would see that as infrastructure improvement. You know, that you're attaching something to the land, a playground, a ball field, you know, water fountains.
Yeah, I think I thought infrastructure pretty much.
But you're not meaning lawnmowers.
I am not meaning that.
No. Okay, I support. Thank you.
Somebody else had their. Oh, I know, Leslin. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I much appreciate the tone of this better than the last time. You were trying to pick a fight, and you know that wasn't right. So I want to support it. I think it's a great idea. Who is developing the criteria? Is this going to be planning? Who's going to come up with, here's what you can and cannot apply for, et cetera? Is that our expectation?
If we tonight say that's our expectation, that'll be our expectation.
Okay. Thank you.
I would, I'm sorry, Jason, did you want to speak?
I would recommend that you follow the same approach that planning is going to take with the municipal housing fund, where they're going to develop probably a one-page set of criteria, they'll set, you know, they'll kind of try to create the review process. I may even suggest that you leave it optional to not go in front of the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, so you're not commingling funds that has traditionally not set a precedent. Maybe you just leave that open and maybe let the planning department develop a one-pager criteria and come back to PDEC to kind of set that. This may make it easier. You want to try to make it fluid so that it's not caught up in multiple levels of bureaucracy for approval, that type of thing. Just my observation. We've already got one thing on the table now. We're planning is kind of setting a program of matching funds. I would recommend you maybe follow the same process.
My concern here is that, and I'm glad it's one time, is that we don't get into a leapfrog situation next year. We want to do this because we're going to give some money to the city. Next year the city wants more money because you gave money to the towns. Where does it stop? I think we have to be very, very careful with starting these kinds of programs at the shoot-from-the-hip basis. And that it worries me a lot. Deborah.
I was going to ask if Jason thought we should amend this to just say that it would be administered by the Department of Planning and Sustainability, because I think we would be perfectly happy to do that.
I have a message from Katie that addresses that, if you would like me to read it.
Sure.
She said simply, as far as I understand it, the program would be up to $5,000 award to a town or village, no match required, doled out on a rolled basis until the funds are used up. Munis would need to fill out a grant application, but it wouldn't be competitive. My guess is that we'd need to do development criteria, that if the applicant met those criteria, they would be awarded the money. So I think STPB involvement would be minimal to non-existent. As long as we can structure it to be pretty simple to administer, then we can do it for 2019.
All right, then. So
that's
we're amending it.
Okay, let's see. That was Mike. If that's friendly to you, Glenn, is it friendly? All right, so that's a friendly amendment. We're taking the STPB out of this equation. Who else? Rich?
If it's non-competitive, what if there isn't enough money to go around?
First come, first serve.
Is that what's meant there?
She said in here, a rolling grant until it is used up.
First come, first serve.
Be early.
Anne and Martha?
Yes, that's right.
Just wondering about when someone mentioned trails. It was Dan who mentioned trails for Caroline, and Mike Sigler said, sure, that was in the essence of the amendment. Do we want to amend that to say parks and trails, or make it more broad than parks then? Because right now parks is not trails.
Yeah. Planning can take care of that, can you?
I think it's covered. I think we understand. I think we understand the expectation here. And besides, it'll still have to come back to PDEC for final review. So there's another process. I wouldn't worry too much about that detail.
Yeah. They would make a recommendation. PDEC would vote on it.
I think so. I think that's the way I would go with it.
Martha, then Dan. Vote.
Yeah, I know. I guess I worry. I know rolling admissions or rolling grants is easier for planning. They just, if something comes in and it's good, they say yes. That's tough because something great may come along after the money comes out, and I mean, that's where you're going to end up hard feelings. I'd rather see a deadline, and if they have to make some tough choices because they have more to expect, more that's requested than $50,000, they shave some off of all of them. I would not like to see a rolling deadline.
So fund you up that in the resolution?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to be a PDEX. I'm just saying that would be my preference. So,
that's reasonable.
Dan? Anna?
Let's vote on it at PDEC for that. And as long as we do that, I'm good.
Ready to vote. So what we're doing is $50,000 one time to the Department of Planning and Sustainability for this Parks Grant Fund to be administered by that department. Anything else? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? One opposed. And not because I don't like parks.
Congeniality gets you votes.
Dan Klein.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to propose an amendment to the budget, which is to adjust the sales tax revenue estimate by $150,000, increase the estimate by $150,000, and have a corresponding decrease in our target expenditures.
Is there a second for that?
Are you going to ask that?
For discussion.
Just the opposite.
Martha seconded it.
For discussion.
Thank you, Martha. Appreciate it.
Discussion. Go ahead, Dan.
So this has been done some budget years, not all, I believe, two out of the last five that I've been in. It's just the opposite of a spending spree. It would be applied to target and not to not to increased one times. So what it'll actually do is lower the tax rate and lower the estimated lower the actual taxes paid per household. The reason that I'm proposing this is that our, as you all know, our sales taxes are booming. Our casino revenues are also way above budget. And our fund balance is something like $37 million. So the risk of doing something like this, and there are risks, the risk is that if sales tax revenues don't come in as high as, you know, if they take a sharp drop, if they fall below what's budgeted, that we do have to make that up at some point. And so I just wanted to let you know what that might look like. If somehow we are completely, or I am completely wrong about $150,000, and it needs to come out of the fund balance, there is enough money in the fund balance to pay $150,000 a year for 247 years. My point being that the risk, there is a risk, I cannot deny it, but the risk is quite, quite low if we're wrong. Thanks.
Anna.
God, it's definitely the end of the night. Jason.
Yes.
I would love your thoughts on this. Why you made the estimate, what you did, and then I forgot the second half of my question.
Sure. The only question I have is, Dan, did you factor in inflation in that number when you did that?
Nor interest, no. All so right, it balances it out.
There's a few years shaved off there. When we did revenue estimates, we looked at a lot of different models. The one that we felt most safe with was looking at your 2017 actual receipts, so what you received in 2017. We look at the past 10 years of average growth, and we increased that growth over that. So I think when I did the budget projections moving out multiple years, I said if you had that actual growth of 2% a year, your year-after-year budget growth would go up 5%, 4%, and 5%, and then those lines would begin to converge together. If you increase the revenue by $150,000 over what we recommended, it would be closer to about 2.4% growth after 2017's actual, and that's about equal to your 15-year average growth, which is about 2.5% from year to year of actual receipts. So all in all, you know, when Dan mentioned this to me, we did a little look at the analysis. I feel it's safe. You're taking marginal risk considering your growth right now and the way it's been trending all year. So I think if you were to do this, it's within your reason and within what I would call the margins of risk.
Can I do a follow-up?
Yes, go ahead.
Right now we're at 1.84%,
mm-hmm.
Which is... we set ours at what, 2.2? And
yes.
I have a cap of what, 9.6?
Right.
I know that is inflated or it's because of Dryden, but even still it would be what, 3 point something or 4 point something, I can't remember. We're way lower than even our own internal estimate. So how is this an advantage? I'm just trying to understand why would we create a riskier scenario, maybe for Dan. I'm just trying to understand what the impetus was.
Who wants to respond? Dan?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. I want to mention, Tompkins County is in great shape. Our budget's in great shape because of conservative decisions we made over the years. Okay, so I'm not saying we need to go wild here. Tax revenue for this year is already $1 million over budget, $1 million more than we budgeted for. Sorry, than last year's income. So $150,000 is a small amount of that. I think what's happened is in these past years when we've taken in so much more than we thought, it's all spilled over into the fund balance. And in 5 years, the fund balance has gone from something like $18 million to $37 million. I mean, it's really ballooned a lot.
That's the piece I wanted to know.
So this is basically just giving a little bit back to the taxpayer.
Okay. I get it. I mean, I know the tax piece, but I wanted that piece was your wiggle. Okay.
Deborah Dawson.
Are you pointing to me, darling?
Yeah, I thought he looked at you and he said my name, and I was like, I'm really confused.
I did
confused.
Not say your name.
No, he did.
Oh.
My question was addressed, so.
I have Martha, Glenn, Ann, Leslin, me.
Dan, I've made this kind of motion in the past when our levy increase was scary. But I agree with Anna that we're below all the things that we set. I also agree that the general fund is, the reserve fund is really wonderfully healthy. Then I'm going to remind everybody where we're going to be tomorrow. And what we're voting on, up to $10 million of borrowing for the airport and, you know, things. There's a lot that's in flux. And there's a way that the reserves are really can save our behinds when we're looking at some big capital projects. So your math is interesting. So how many years? Okay. But what Anna said, I don't feel that we have the pressure to do this to lower the levy. And I also would point out we've added almost 585,000 coming out of one-time funds in what we've done here for a lot of things that we'd probably like to make target in the future. So I'm going to, I think, staying a touch conservative is better.
Glenn?
Kevin, is the 1.84 reflection of the $150,000 deduct?
No, but I'd gladly show you what that looks like if you'd like.
$154,000.
Okay.
A little over 1.5.
Ann.
Thank you. For me, I'd like to be somewhat fiscally conservative. When I talked to the town of Ulysses about the money for the parks, in my head, and what I said was, I see this as something that we have the luxury possibly to spend right now, but it, you know, in other years, you know, not to expect this to be an ongoing thing. And for me, looking at a lot of different things, as far as the federal government, as far as Wall Street, as far as a lot of uncertainties, I would rather keep the tax rate as it is and have any extra little bit of cushion, because, as Martha said, we have $8 to $10 million that we don't know exactly if we're going to get reimbursement for the airport. We have raised the age. We have a new jail. We have different facility, you know, improvements. We have possibly losing funding for roads and bridges over the next couple of years. We just don't really know. So I think we've done really good getting it to 1.84, and I'd like to stick with that as far as the tax levy.
Leslin.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Dan, for bringing this forward. Let me see how best to put this. $150,000 is not going to break our bank. And even with all the things we're talking about, and Rick, I was watching your face, I've never seen you pop one eyebrow here and squirm this way. And yeah, you were carrying on over there. I wanted to get your opinion as you were carrying on. I don't think it's going to... All the things that we have that's probably going to be coming down the pike, I don't think this is going to hamper any of that. And in a year when we are actually seeing positive, I think it's good to give something back. And so I will support this. I don't expect that next year our sales taxes are going to plummet, but who knows? We never know. It's all, predictions. But it's $150,000, y'all, out of $37 freaking million. That's the best way I could put it. So I'm going to support this.
I'm not going to support it because I'm a strong believer in a strong fund balance. It helps us with our bonding issues. Every year we ask for a better bond rating. We haven't quite got to the top yet. We're doing pretty well. And one of the things that does that for us is our fund balance. And, Dan, yes, $37 million, but a lot of that spoke for already. We simply have to have in there, for example, we have to have cash to pay the school districts for their unpaid taxes, and the same with the villages, because they can't do the kind of foreclosure proceedings that the county can do. Usually we see the manipulation of the sales tax suggestions at the end, when, as Martha said, when we're trying to keep the tax rate down. We have the tax rate down. It's lower than what we have bargained for our contracts for our labor people, which is generally around 2%. I think we're doing pretty good. We've also spent money this year on a lot of one-time things that in a tight year we probably wouldn't have agreed to. I think we've been a little more generous, but we've targeted what we wanted to spend that money on. I think we're taking into consideration the homeowners by having a tax levy increase of 1.84% when we could have 9%. I think that's... I don't think I want to see this figure adjusted.
Most of the appreciate even the small adjustments.
Rich?
Yeah, I like that number of 1.54, but I worry about what's happening at the state and federal levels, and where we've had some consistency over the years. I don't know what's happening in those venues that could impact us in a very large way. And I think having the fund balance is a smart thing to do. I think I'm not going to support this.
Amanda?
I'm going to support this because I think hard times are here. We don't know what's going to happen next year. We don't know what's going to happen at the federal government. We don't know right now. So let's give back a little bit right now.
Anyone else? Okay, so the motion has been made for a change in the sales tax. Dan has moved this. It's been seconded to reduce our sales tax projection, to increase our sales tax projection by $150,000, which would then reduce our tax rate on the levy. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those opposed? 3, 4. That passes. So that'll be adjusted. So we're past our time for our break, but let's see if we can't finish up tonight. Is there anyone else that wants to bring forth a motion tonight? And I want to point out that even if you haven't done it, you have right up until we adopt the final budget on the night of the adoption, which is November something. $3 million in which you can do something.
That money, girl, go for it.
So having said that, Martha, is there you want to bring a you have a motion?
Well, I would point out that Section 2, page 21, is what Dan's been talking about. Now, $3 million for a... No. Will you second it?
Go for it.
Yeah. All right, let's not get punchy, people. Let's see if we can finish up tonight.
Just saying that I could say, but I'm not saying.
Go ahead. Kevin, will you just please point out the figures at the top of the screen?
So the the increase in the levy of the amended budget with these amendments over the 2018 adopted would be 1.54%, which is 0.11% over the levy increase that's in the recommended budget. That would be $54,773 in increased target spending, $584,896 in increased one-time spending, both over what's in the recommended budget.
Kevin, we have a proposed resolution to adopt the tentative budget on our desk. Can you tell us what the X's should be?
Yes, obviously the date is the 15th of October. The total levy amount would be $49,898,306.
You came in and out on that. Say that again, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry. $49,898,306. The next set of X's resulting in an approximate tax levy increase of 1.54%.
Why are we comparing it to?
And a countywide average tax rate of $6.40 per thousand, comma, a decrease of 2.64%.
Okay.
Resolved further, this action also results in an increase of $13.90 on a median priced home assessed at $185,000.
$1,390.
All right. So, can you go over the numbers again? Some of us didn't get all of them.
Sure. Why don't I try to highlight them on the screen as well,
okay,
as we go?
So the first one,
Start from the beginning. $49 million. $898,306.
So that seems like a different number than you had on the previous page for the tax levy.
$49,898,306.
Okay. Oh, amended. Okay, I looked at the recommended. Thank you.
Try not to be wrong in public.
That's why I said it looked like a different one. I didn't say he was wrong.
Go ahead, Kevin.
The next number is the percent levy increase over, there's wrong in public. Look, there's an artifact of a few years back. It says percent levy increase over 2018 is what we're looking for, and that is 1.54%. The countywide average tax rate per thousand would be $6.40 per thousand. And the change in the rate would be a decrease of 2.64%. And the increase on the median priced home, again, the updated number is $185,000, would be $13.90.
Thank you.
Someone want to, Martha, are you going to move this?
I have a question. Could you go back to the previous screen? you said the target, change it to recommended target spending, $54,737. Now, does the $150 that we just added to the sales tax revenue, does that change that? Or so that is literally we added $54,000 in target spending?
I misspoke. That's the change in the tax levy amount, not the target spending amount. I apologize.
From the recommended.
Right. Okay. So column L is just the difference between column J and column K.
Okay, but that's the target spending. The reserve, the one-time spending is 584,896, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and that so what we added by our actions, the target increase was only 54.7, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, and I misworded it at first, but it's the change in the levy.
Right. Okay.
Does everyone know where we are? Glenn?
Ready to move it.
All right, Glenn is moving it. Seconded by Deborah. Now, tomorrow night you will have this resolution in your red folders with the actual figures in it. So we'll have to adopt it tomorrow night.
Just want to say congratulations.
Well, a couple more things here. Let's just give me a couple minutes.
This is easy.
So if we are a committee of the legislature, expanded budget committee, so what we're doing is taking committee action on this resolution to bring it forth to the full legislature, which we are, tomorrow night. So we will act on it again tomorrow night if this passes. So, but before we do that, I want to say something to the budget committee members that we have to meet tomorrow before our legislature at 4 o'clock. We have a heavy, now this isn't the expanded budget committee, this is our regular budget committee. We have no less than 7 minutes to approve. We have 13 resolutions. And we have an executive session regarding a personnel matter, all to do before our meeting at 5:30. So come and be crisp tomorrow night. Thank you. Now I'm going to go back to the – I just wanted to get that out before everyone took off. Are we ready to vote on this? It's been moved and seconded to be our tentative budget. And now, Anna, if you want to make any accolades, you're welcome to do that.
No, I was saying, there's five new legislators. You have now officially gone through a rite of passage. Congratulations to all of you, and well done, Mike.
Thank you, but it's all on these folks over here that have done the work.
Do we have to vote on this?
Yeah, don't we have to vote?
All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Yeah.
Are there any opposed? That is unanimous. We have a tentative budget. Thank you all.